cashing in? Have you been waiting all week? Oh, I have. Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we are so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Fear not. We're going to help out the only way we know how by being in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free. Thanks to our sponsors this week, ExpressVPN and HelloFresh. They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games and their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The guy who loves owls, especially when they're superb, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
I went to Rice University. Our mascot was the owls. I like owls.
Yeah. Like a superb owl?
I don't get the reference, but I'll pretend like I did. I do.
Seriously, you don't get the reference?
No, what is it?
This is what people call the Super Bowl, superb owl.
They do? Huh? I haven't watched football in 5 years. I don't know. I mean, dude, Brady.
All right. Well, luckily, we're not going to be talking about it. It was a stinker game. Anyway, the good news is we have lots of video games to talk about. In fact, the Steam Game Festival is this week, and so there's like 500 new demos. I think it was somewhere around 500. It's insane. We got tons of games to talk about. We've got news to talk about, and we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, we are so excited because DLC stands for Developing Live Communities, because we have the head of community marketing at Twitch. Ms. Mary Kish is joining us. Hey, Mary.
Hi. I thought you were going to say downloadable Kish.
Oh, yeah. It kind of works. Although, you spell with a K, though, don't you?
Yeah, but sometimes you could still make it work.
All right. I like it. Welcome. It's been, every year we talk about the guests we'd like to have on the show, and we ask the audience to submit names, and your name came up again and again. So I'm super glad you decided to join us. We're so delighted to have you.
That's so exciting. That makes me happy. I'm really excited to be here. I like having things to do on my weekend, and I don't. And it's so exciting when someone asks me to partake in something from my home. So this is really fun, and I'm happy to just talk with some people for a couple hours. It sounds great.
Awesome. Well, let's jump in and start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by visiting our subreddit, that's 5x5dlc.reddit.com, or by heading over to the Discord, which is also 5x5dlc on the old Discord. Lots of cool folks hanging out, a great community. I recommend you joining them. But Mary, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Oh my goodness. I would probably say, even though it is a sad story, that the biggest news I heard was that a couple games that I'm very much looking forward to are not coming out this year, and thus the year is ruined.
Already, here we are. Just February hit, and the year is already ruined. Also, I will point out, Christian, my Cool Ranch prediction of every game being delayed. Mary, we do predictions at the beginning of the year every year, and I made the prediction that every single game will be delayed this year. And so far,
no.
Pretty good.
Pretty good, but no, because this is my saving grace, is that Hitman 3 came out. It's likely going to be a Game of the Year candidate at the end of the year. So everything else can be delayed. Great. But you wrong, Jeff. You wrong.
All right. Well,
so are you saying we peaked in February then? There's nothing else?
I don't know how long these launch windows are, Mary. That's what I'm saying. Like, when new games are coming out with the consoles in launch window and we reach February, March, I don't know how long is my window open for, you know? Like, I just don't know anymore.
Well, we did get news this week, care of an Activision Blizzard investor call. This is the news that Mary is referring to, that neither Diablo 4 nor Overwatch 2 will be released in 2021. So that doesn't mean that they will be released in 2022 either. They may be even farther off than that. But, you know, I think we were hoping at least one of those two games would be coming out this calendar year. Mary, were you thinking that we might get both in 2021?
I think I also am a betting woman, and I really assume that things will get delayed. I had expectations that Diablo would get delayed. For whatever reason, I thought Overwatch 2 might happen because the last time Overwatch came out, Overwatch 1, you see, they announced it and then they also were like, and it's coming out very, very soon, like in a couple months. And it was this wonderful experience because everyone got to see it. They got to get excited about it. And then it literally came out and they did such a good job with that. And so I kind of was hoping that was going to be the thing here too. So that one hit me in the gut a little bit.
Yeah, you know, we love that too. We talk about that all the time. We love the like short announcement to release window. It's so satisfying when, you know, Bethesda comes out and says Fallout 4 is going to be available in 3 months. And people are like, whoa, we didn't even know. Oh, that's amazing. And that, you're right. The first Overwatch was like that as well. It was an IP that nobody even had heard of. And Blizzard came out and we're like, hey, we've got this Overwatch and we're putting it out soon. It does feel exciting to not have to keep waiting and waiting and waiting. And I was like you. I thought that Diablo 4 was the long shot for this year, but I thought for sure Blizzard and by extension Activision would have at least one of these two this year. And I thought Overwatch 2 seemed like the much more likely candidate for 2021, but no. So you're saying you evidently were very much anticipating at least one of these games, and it's going to affect the year for you.
I was banking on it, Jeff.
Yeah.
You know, I was really hoping that this was the year.
We need something positive.
I needed this one. Yeah. It's a shame. These are both games that you can spend hours and hours and hours in. So there's lots of titles that will be coming out that I'm looking forward to. But what I really like is to have a game where I'm like, you can easily sink 50 plus hours into this and it won't feel exhausting or boring. Diablo 3 was a game that I played again and again and again, and there was always something else to achieve. It's notorious for that. You could basically take a week off of work, enjoy it, and then play it 6 months later. It's that good. Overwatch was similar. It's incredible replayability. So these are games that aren't just enjoyable. They're not just well made. They're games that you can live in for an extended period of time. Now I got to get into like WoW again. Like, this isn't what you want. Like, you want a game that you can just spend a lot of time in.
I have to admit, I've been playing a lot of WoW lately. So, you know, guilty as charged. But yeah, I mean, Christian, what do you think? I think both of us thought at least one of these two would be a tent pole for the company in 2021. Do you think it's likely now that both games come out in 2022? Or do you think we're looking at one of the two at least being even farther out?
Yeah, I think potentially the latter. I think another part of this Activision news out of their quarterly earnings call was that they're going to look to make more games like Call of Duty. It's been a huge success for them this past year with kind of the season pass and the mobile version, which is an excellent version of that game. I think this means that Diablo Immortal is going to be even a bigger part of their catalog and what they're looking to do. And I think if it is as good as the alpha was led to believe and as good as it was, I don't even remember, 2018, 2019, the last in-person BlizzCon, like even then it played really well. And Call of Duty Mobile certainly is monetized, but I think it's monetized pretty fairly, kind of like Fortnite and some of those other games. I think it could be a huge hit. So I think that speaks more than these other games being delayed. Overwatch does surprise me the most only because as I sit here and play with my, can I get this on my Overwatch Death Adler, like Death Adder. I always want to add an L in that. It's Overwatch is a game that needs something right now, I think. I think the pandemic hurt the tournament, the league, and the LA's team is leaving and fired everybody, but they're still LA's team, but they're not playing here. I think it needs something. I think Valorant is, you know, with their Strike Force or whatever their thing is going on right now, Call of Duty being huge, Fortnite being huge. I think Overwatch needs that injection. So I really thought Overwatch 2 could be it, but maybe Blizzard also thinks it needs it, and it needs more than a 3-hour story mission. You know, I don't know, yeah. But maybe they're making it bigger and better.
Clearly, you know, Blizzard has a track record of not putting stuff out until it's ready. That's, you know, been their MO for a long time. So, you know, this isn't surprising in the sense that Blizzard takes a long time to make games. And usually when they put a game out, it's because it's really ready. Another interesting tidbit from this investor call is that Activision Blizzard plans to do a lot more remasters. They had success with Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2, which, you know, Christian, you went gaga for, Crash Bandicoot and Spyro the Dragon. And it sounds like there's going to be a lot more of that. We talked about the rumor of Vicarious Visions being absorbed into Blizzard so that they could work on a Diablo 2 remaster. So maybe that's going to be the stopgap before we get a Diablo 4. Mary, what do you think of a Diablo 2 remaster so that Diablo 4 can take, you know, 2-3 more years to come out?
I would probably be really excited to play Diablo 2 again. And so I'd be very welcoming to join that world again and have that experience. I think I would be really satisfied with that. It's interesting. They just have such a spicy history with releasing things as remasters or mobile and having people be really mad at them.
Yeah.
They have an expectation to get Diablo 4 out. And because they've delayed it, if they do anything else, I would almost anticipate the audience would just be like, that's not good enough. And yeah, that's unfortunate. I would be happy to take that. I would definitely, oh man, what a great game that was. Yes, now I'm excited. I would definitely play that again immediately. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would be super excited to play that too. Christian, do you have any other like Activision remaster wish list games? I mean, I don't know.
I love Guitar Hero. I know that
a remaster of Guitar Hero.
I know they ran it into the ground, but like again, and I probably
why
still have
you
my
just
guitar.
Put out another Guitar Hero. You don't like update the graphics in Guitar Hero.
Maybe you do. I don't know.
They tried that. It didn't go well.
I know. I know. But I'm just saying. I mean, you were talking about it with Rock Band, Jeff. Your kids in the garage, and
yeah,
like, you know, talking about Diablo 2 remaster. There are some people that would be like, that's not good enough. And for everyone else, it would be like, hey, you weren't born when Diablo 2 came out. This isn't a remaster for you. This is a new game, one of the best of all time. Go play it. Activision's back catalog, I think, is a very interesting one because a lot of it's a lot of Call of Duties, Guitar Heroes.
I think we're going to get some Call of Duty remasters. Like they're going to start plucking from that. It's going to be like, you know, Modern Warfare 3 or 2 or whatever
they've
it was.
They've done them.
They did the first one, right? But they haven't remastered 2 or 3, have they?
They've done at least 2 of them.
Oh, well, I suspect there'll still be some of those Call of Duties in the mix for remasterification. But again, this isn't remakes. You know, I'm much more into the remake than the remaster, personally. But
well, just wait till my story of the week then, Jeff.
well, let's get right to it. What is your story of the week, Christian?
You know how you love remakes and not remasters. Well, how do you feel about legendaries? We finally got the much rumored Mass Effect Legendary Edition announcement with a release date and console release and what it is. And it is a remaster, but kind of like it's a remaster with like new fondant on it a little bit, right? Like, They changed some stuff.
I think you're mixing your metaphors quite a bit there, pal, but I appreciate it.
Everybody watches Great British Bake Off, and everybody knows what fondant is, and everybody knows that that's how you patch up a hole in the cake. Like, it's not that hard to figure this out.
You know, no one remasters a cake. You said remastering with fondant. Anyway, that's
yes.
Okay. Go ahead. Dude. I know. I get it. Fondant. It's delicious. Let's go. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put a speed bump in there.
Yeah, a speed bump made out of fondant because it gets hard and you leave it out. So it is a remastering with a few tweaks. They're changing some things about one, and you know, they released this whole list of things that they're changing. But I think for me, the most interesting thing is that it's not coming out until May. You know, Mary, we talked about at the beginning, like announce release. May feels a long time from now. And it's also
May 14th is the actual date. Yeah.
May 14th. And it's coming out for PC, PS4, and Xbox One, and available on current gen consoles via back compatibility, but currently no announcement of like an extra zhuzh.
Right.
You know, no like piping, you might say, keeping it in the cake or not.
But they do say that there will be much quicker load times. You'll be standing in, you know, elevators a lot less time.
The buildings are smaller is what it is. They're much shorter buildings.
HDR support and 4K resolutions. I'm sure all of that is going to look sharper on PS5 and Xbox Series X and S than it will, even though it's not specifically made for those. I'm sure because those systems just are made for that.
To me, it just feels like, I think this is a big announcement. I think people are very excited for it. And I realize a lot of people still can't buy PS5s and Xbox Series consoles. But May feels far away. And this, I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting except for more, if that makes sense.
Mary, when you saw this announcement, or I don't know how much of a Mass Effect fan you are, but first tell us if you're excited about this at all. And secondly, if this sort of lives up to the promise of better versions of the classic Mass Effect trilogy.
Yeah, that's a tough question for me because I haven't played this trilogy. I've observed other people play it. I watched my friend Nina play through the series on Twitch. I think what's cool about the Mass Effect series is that it's really fun to watch other people play. It's kind of like watching someone and you're watching a movie. It's very cinematic. Everybody has a very different experience. And chat can get involved. It's really fun to have people tell you which choices to make and whisper in your ear how to do well with a character that you want to get in good graces with. It's pretty exciting. And you can choose.
I think she's talking about love scenes, y'all.
Maybe, you know, I've heard this is a family show.
It is. It
Who
is
knows?
Indeed. It is
Who indeed. Knows what I'm saying? But yes, totally. Getting in on that good stuff. And I think it's a very joyful game to watch other people play. And it's very exciting. So I think the idea of doing this will make a bunch of streamers probably replay through the series again. And that'll be something I can't wait to watch again. But my question is like, will, even though the branches are different every time you play, because there's so many different ways to play the game. What is the draw that brings us back to playing it? Like, did you give people enough to say, yes, I'm going to play through this game again? It doesn't sound, at least to Christian, it doesn't sound like it was enough for you to want to play through it again.
Yeah. I mean, all they needed to say was ray tracing and I would have played it again.
I wonder how hard it would be to throw that into an old engine like that.
Well, right. Because it's still the original Unreal 3, I think it was built around. And so I get the limitations, but to me, these games were very epic and I appreciate them, but they are not my favorite series. So it's not like going back to hang out with old friends again. I don't feel compelled with what they've added. But Jeff, I know that you were, you know, high and low on some of them. Is this enough for you to go drive the Mako around again and get out?
I was always very critical of this series too. I mean, people hold them as, you know, their favorite franchise of all time. And I was always much more a Dragon Age guy than a Mass Effect guy. Not that there had to be a dichotomy there, but that just, as those games are kind of coming out from BioWare at the same time, I always preferred the shades of gray of the Dragon Age games to the sort of Paragon or what's the opposite? Vanguard, right? Vanguard? Paragon and Vanguard? Anyway, the good guy, bad guy, light and dark roles of Mass Effect. And I played through all three of those games. I appreciated them. But yeah, I'm not, you know, chomping at the bit to do it again. I think HDR and 4K is pretty slick. I think I was looking at somebody put together literally a shot by shot of the trailer that they released. You can look and see literally each shot in the trailer with the original version as it was released. And it's pretty dramatic. Most of the, I mean, there's a few shots where it doesn't really, you can't really tell much has been done, but a lot of it is much crisper. You can see a lot more texture. The models themselves, in a few cases, the faces look much less disturbing, you know, much less uncanny valley, and a little more, you know, human, like the humans in particular. The aliens always looked good, but the humans in that game sometimes looked a little weird. But so, yeah, there's, you know, there are improvements, and all of the DLC, right? All of it, every single bit of the DLC that was released throughout that entire trilogy.
That's like, what, 377 episodes.
It's
like,
insane. Well, I see what you did there. No, I mean, I think that's a pretty interesting package. And the fact that it's going to support ultra-wide monitors, I love that on PC as a big proponent of ultra-wide. So that's a plus. But no, I think this is cool. I think fans of Mass Effect are going to dig it. And people that have never played these games are going to have an opportunity to play them in a way that looks contemporary. And I think that's great. But I'm definitely much more interested in the, you know, Shadows of the Colossus or Final Fantasy VII's of the world, where we really are remaking that old content rather than just, you know, giving it some fondant, so to speak.
I say all that, and I won't talk about this later, so I'll mention it now. I say all that, but then when God of War 2018 got patched with 4K and 60 frames per second, I was like, yeah, this is a current gen game. This is so bad. I'm playing this whole game again.
But that,
so
Mass Effect wasn't made for the PlayStation 4. You know, it was made for earlier.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, that is, I understand that if this is enough for you, if you're a big fan of the franchise, like, that was enough for me for God of War. If I was, anyway, fondant is what I'm saying.
I actually think fondant is a really good thing to say about this, because fondant doesn't taste good. It is strictly to cover up mistakes and to make something look presentable to the public. It's not meant to be consumed. You fold it off of the cake and then you eat good cake. So in this sense, they're putting some stuff on it that will hopefully let people dive into the same white sheet cake they've been eating for years.
Christian, Mary just fixed your metaphor for you.
Oh, that was impressive. I didn't want to jump on you when you said fondant tasted good. I just let that slide. But yes, fondant is what you make so you can make something that's not a cake look like a cake, right? Like, someone right now is making a Mass Effect Legendary Edition, and then they're going to cut it, and we're going to be like, it's cake! Like, that's what it's for.
I think what we've revealed is that I'm a pie guy.
Nobody has pie at a wedding, Jeff.
Okay, so Jeff,
I don't like weddings.
This is a lattice crust, okay? So that's what I'm saying. It's just,
All right. Now I understand. All right, let's get to my story of the week, which is a rumor, but a pretty fascinating one that I want to talk about. Evidently, the much anticipated, the much rumored Apple VR AR headset has been leaked, or at least details have been leaked. And a lot of news outlets picked this up. A lot of major news outlets picked it up. So it leads me to believe that the leak has at least some sense of credibility. And it's pretty fascinating. The idea is that there will be an Apple VR headset, not just an AR headset, a VR-only headset that will be coming out, I think, in 2022? Yeah, 2020. Oh, no, wait. No, this will be announced this year, 2021, supposedly, according to the leak. And that will be setting up the AR headset for 2022. And this VR headset will have a billion D cameras in it, two ultra high resolution 8K displays. It's supposed to have more than a dozen cameras in it for tracking. It's supposed to have eye tracking, so it looks back at your eyes so it can track where your eyeballs are looking in the image. So there's a lot of really cool effects that can, or benefits to that technology. But there isn't really any consumer VR headset that does it yet.
It has a $400 stand, $800 wheels. What else does it?
Well, no, the rumored price tag, according to this leak, is $3,000. Now, the comparison here is to something more like the HoloLens, which Microsoft is selling HoloLens 2 for $3,500, which really isn't aimed at the consumer level. Enterprise. It's an enterprise product. It meant for big corporate use. It meant for development. It's not really an end user sort of average person kind of even product. It's to set up, to build content for, to show off the tech for the eventual consumer product. And that's evidently the way Apple is going to do this. But Mary, I'm curious. I don't know what you're feeling about VR. I'm a huge VR fan. So I'm excited about a company making basically the Ferrari of VR headsets. Like, yes, two 8K. I mean, supposedly the rumor was that like the chip in this thing, which is more like a Quest type standalone product, the chip in this thing is so powerful. It's powerful than the fastest, more powerful than the fastest Mac right now. And that I will need to have a fan in the headset to cool it. But I'm all for this, man. I don't know anything that can power 16K of pixels, right? Two 8K displays at the same time. But go for it, Apple, is my opinion. But $3,000, you know, also makes me blush a bit. So tell me what your take on this crazy rumor is.
It's just such an exorbitant amount of money to put into something that's going to attach to your phone and record everything that you're doing. I think that Apple has a history of making the Rolls Royce of items, and they are good at that. And they also make them stylish and sleek. But when it comes to VR, you want to attach those pieces to a piece of machinery that's going to really be able to handle it and take you to a cool location. That's what works really well with a lot of the VR pieces. I would have assumed that this is something they would want you to use with your iPhone so that you can utilize it with all of their other stuff. And then that's not going to be a very valuable use of a $3,000 peripheral. Like those are some AirPods, you know, like that's a lot to ask of a consumer. I suppose I'll have to test it. This is something that probably like would have been a wonderful thing to see at a CES or something where you'd get to like actually experience it, the old try before you buy. But I am not convinced in by any stretch of the imagination after, you know, buying a couple pieces of VR equipment for $1,000 and swallowing that chestnut that I would put $3,000 down to hope that they're going to have the games behind this. My eyes are squinty. I'm not there. I think
that's probably pretty wise. I, on the other hand, I'm looking to pick up an extra job to pay for this thing. So if anybody's hiring a slightly used podcaster, I am available and looking to put some money in the piggy bank for when this thing drops. You make really good points from my perspective about the software side, which seems like Apple isn't really, this is like putting it out so that, you know, if they build it, they will come. The Field of Dreams version of VR software management. And, you know, if it's Apple, maybe they really will come to the Field of Dreams. But, you know, it is a big bite to take, especially because Apple's not super friendly with, you know, anybody putting software on their platform. So the idea of like playing Half-Life Alyx on this or some just like it'll hook up to Steam VR is probably not super likely. It'll probably be a walled garden like every other Apple product. So that bums me out that all of this great software that's already out, all this great VR gaming software that's already available may not even be compatible with this thing. It's a lot of assumptions. But Christian, what do you think? 3K, two 8K displays, 12 cameras. Sounds like a deal. Sounds like a bargain, if you ask me.
Yeah. So if you break it down, there's 16K of display, okay, for $3,000 of dollars. That's like 50 cents per K of display, which
that's a great per K cost, I say.
I mean, you look at that and a fan, like, you know, maybe your house doesn't have AC. So you got a headset with a fan. It's like one of those Disney hats, like, bzzz, you know, like it makes.
That is what I'm imagining is the propeller on the top, you know, like the old dunce cap.
It is a lot of money. These are all just rumors. You know, they seem fairly credible. The thing that I guess surprises me the most about them is that it is talk of a closed VR style headset, where I was expecting Apple's to be more, and I know this is the precursor of the AR, but I think that's much more what they're interested in with LiDAR and what it does in the iPad Pro and the new iPhone 12 Pro, I think has the LiDAR 12 Pro.
Yeah.
And like that tech is really impressive. So I'm very curious, you know, what this leads to, but I'd honestly be surprised if Apple released a closed off VR headset. Clearly these rumors point otherwise, but that market's already pretty niche. I know the Oculus 2 sold very well and had a good fourth quarter, but still in the grand scheme of things, fairly niche. And then you put $3,000 price tag on it. That becomes fairly quiche, you know, like it's even smaller than niche.
You are going for it tonight. You know what? Big swings.
The more egg swing. You put in something, the smaller it becomes, I think is how it works. I'm super curious. I love Apple products. I use a lot of them. You and I had a tweeting back and forth about the AirPod Max, the over ear, the cans, the new cans they released. And it's like, you know,
it's overpriced.
It's so expensive. So to me, $3,000 is a stopper. Like, I can get a 77-inch LG OLED, 4K, 120 hertz, HDMI 2.1 for like $2,500 right now. That feels like a lot, and I would use that way more than I would use this headset. So $3,000 is just too much. It's too much.
Well,
so
what they do is they leak out the $3,000 price tag, and then 6 months from now when they announce it and it's like $1,800, people are like, it's so cheap!
You know? Apple's got you when 1800 is like, that is so affordable. I can get that in 6 payments or less. I got this.
The That's way right. They are masters, in my opinion, of like the new MacBook Air is only $999. That's expensive. It's not, you know, it's a good computer with the M1 chip. It's a good computer. And then you go and look at it and you're like, well, clearly going to upgrade the RAM. Okay, well, I need a bigger SSD. Okay, I'm going to add that. And it's like, oh, now it's $4,000. Well, I've already decided on buying this. I'm not going to buy you. I'm in it. They're really good at that upstairs.
I got a second mortgage in my house now. But you know what? For good VR headset.
I bet it will only work with AirPods. I bet it will only work with all of their little extra bits. And it's going to take a very specific adapter to get it to work. And they're just going to get you. And you're going to have these two giant bags full of shiny Apple products that look really nice when you take them out of the container, and then they got you. All you guys. I'm an Android.
I mean, I believe it. You know, they've gotten me before. I've been wanting to, there are things that will happen, you know, like the short period where, like, you know, Project X Cloud and stuff wouldn't work on Apple products for a while. And I was like, I'll leave Apple. And then I go, well, I'm so hot committed to all the Apple universe that I've found myself in. I can never leave you, Apple.
Lean your head, Jeff, one way. Just lean. Oh, never mind. There is one. I thought there was room in the center for another VR headset, but no.
No, and that's not all the VR headsets. There's two more up there.
Oh my God.
And the PSVR is in the other room. It's bad. It's a sickness. I'm not proud of myself. It has not improved my marriage.
Quote unquote. VR is dope. Like, it's a really cool escape, and it's just a wonderful hobby for so many people. And it's done a lot for people in various ways. I mean, whether it's helping people with disability or helping people in this very dark time be able to escape their place. One of the most incredible experiences last year, my game of the year, was Half-Life Alyx last year, because I was able to transport myself out of this living room and have an adventure. And it was life-changing, honestly. And I still to this day say, if there is anything that can sell VR to you, it's Half-Life Alyx. It is that good of an experience. So you don't have to sell me on VR, but
Yeah.
Apple, I don't trust you, and you do weird stuff, and you cost thousands of dollars, and you just do the weirdest stuff. You don't make it adaptable for anyone else. It's not for the everyday man. It's like this very elite thing, and it, like, the idea of these cameras. Why are all these cameras on here? Where are they being faced? You prove to me I need these, because I would get a discount one with like half the cameras. I'll get half the K. Let's do half the K. Do we need it?
You want like the iPhone, like the, you know, the 256 SE. Gig or the 500 gig. Yeah, you want half the Ks. I'm just saying, Mary, I love, by the way, love that you loved Half-Life Alyx. It was also my game of the year last year. But imagine it with two 8K displays. I mean,
it's not necessary.
Oh, but it would be so, so sweet, so crisp.
What computer would drive that?
Well, that's what they're saying. The rumor is that it's this, you know, Apple's making their own silicone now. They've got these fancy, like, what are the?
Yeah, the
6 nanometer or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like these incredible processors that literally have to be cooled on your face.
You just wear a giant fan.
There you go.
A 10-pound fan.
And that part in Half-Life Alyx, when the wind blows you, you've already got the effect. Virtual reality. I'm in. I'm actively looking for work to afford this. So, and don't tell my wife. All right. Let's get to the games that we have been playing, because there's a lot of them. But first, I want to thank our first sponsor, which is ExpressVPN. How did you choose your internet provider? Let me guess. You didn't. You used the only one that you could get. And that's the sad thing. Most of us have very little choice, because ISPs operate like monopolies in the regions that they serve, and they use this monopoly power to take advantage of their customers. Data caps, streaming throttles, the list goes on and on. But worst of all, many ISPs log your internet activity and sell that data to other big tech companies or advertisers. To prevent ISPs from seeing my internet activity, I protect all my devices with ExpressVPN. And I've been doing it for a long, long time, before they were ever a sponsor. So what is ExpressVPN? Well, it's a simple app for your computer or your smartphone that encrypts all your network data and tunnels it through a secure VPN server so that your ISP cannot see any of your activity. Just think about how much of your life is on the internet. Every site you visit, every video you watch, every message you get is tracked by ISPs or other tech giants so they can sell your information for profit. That's the reason I recommend ExpressVPN as the best way to hide your online activity from your ISP. You just download the app, you tap one button on your device, and you're protected. And ExpressVPN does all this without slowing your connection. That is why I picked ExpressVPN years ago as my VPN of choice, because it's fast. And it's also why it's the number one rated VPN service by CNET and Wired. Protect your online activity today with the VPN rated number one by CNET and Wired. Visit our exclusive link, expressvpn.com/DLC, and you can get an extra 3 months for free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/DLC to learn more. expressvpn.com/DLC. It's time to talk about the games that we have been playing this week. Mary, what have you been playing?
I have been playing Yakuza, my first Yakuza. It's very fun. I've never played a Yakuza. I've always wanted to play a Yakuza. When I tweeted, "What's a good Yakuza?" I had like 500 replies, all different. All different games.
That's not helpful.
Yeah. And I sifted through and found that Yakuza 0 was a good entryway into the series that kind of helps explain a little bit about the story. It's got a lot of fun silliness to it, apparently, and has kind of some of the classic elements that everybody really loves about that series. And so I gave it a whirl, and it's really fun. It's everything everyone said it was.
I'm so glad to hear that. I am also like you, I never have played a Yakuza. I'm assuming you did this because they have shown up on Game Pass, right? Is that why you're jumping in now, or is it just because you'd heard so many good things about it?
It's a little bit A, a little bit B. Everyone keeps telling me to play it, and I was always like, I think intimidated because it's such a big series. There's so many games. I was like, I'll never be able to catch up, and I'm not dealing with all that lore crap. You know, all that lore crap.
Yeah.
Anyway, when it was on Game Pass, it kind of was a breath of fresh air. Like, oh, maybe some of them will be better. And so I've been told that Yakuza 0 works. You don't have to play all the other ones. You'll understand what's going on. It's just a silly entryway. And so far, although I am early in, it is an absolute blast and it is super worth it. And so I think I probably will have to come back to you with a full report card. But at this juncture, I would tell you that it's a pretty fun game and I would recommend it to other people who have never played a Yakuza before.
Now, I know you haven't played any of the other Yakuzas, but are you finding that Zero is what you had hoped, where it's not loading you down with a bunch of lore? Are you kind of following the story as you go on in?
Yeah, it's starting me out really well. It is a different, it hasn't given me any story where I'm like, I have no idea who that is. But some people have told me like there's like little secrets around, but not to me, but it doesn't impede my experience at all. I've seen clips from this game. So I know it's filled, yeah. It's riddled with mini games, but the mini game that it threw me into was super reasonable for me to figure out over time. Christian, you would like it. 'Cause it was kind of like Guitar Hero. It was like, you're doing karaoke, and then to do karaoke well, you just have to hit the right button at the right time. And the better you do it, the better at karaoke you are. But it doesn't give you any it doesn't set you up for this. It's not like there's no tutorial where it's like, this is how you do it. It's just like, you're singing now, like get it. And I'm hitting triangle and X and square and trying to figure it out. And it was just a kind of a joy. It seems like everybody, I was streaming it. So everybody who was playing it with me, it just felt like everybody was having a good time alongside of me. It didn't feel like everyone was suffering or like wondering what was going on. We were all just along for this ride. And I think if you have that mindset, which is just like, I don't know what's going to happen. I bet you there's going to be a mini game, you know, where I'm like fighting a street sweeper. I don't know what's going to happen. But like, if you have that enjoyment, you'll have a good experience. The other really cool thing is the combat, which you like level up this bar. And then when you hit a button, you do a special, and the special is totally different based on if you have something in your hand or if you're in a weird environment. Like the first time I picked up this can of nails and I used the special and I thought I'll probably just dink him in the head with it. But I put him in the dude's mouth and I kicked him, and it was really stressful, but it was just very exciting. And like, I was just like, oh dang, like I'm gonna kill this dude. And like this other time I was in a hallway with a window and I hit my special and I pushed him out the window. And it was just kind of this really neat experience that no matter where you are or what you have, you're gonna have a very unique set of results. So I think even if you did play it before, you probably wouldn't have expected some of this wild stuff to happen. And that's a really cool experience that this game does. You're never really prepared for what this game's going to throw your way.
That's awesome. We have friends. I think Christian Garnett is like a huge Yakuza fan. I remember him talking about it for years and years, and it still never got me to actually try any of these games. But now that I'm on Game Pass, maybe I will check out Yakuza 0. Did you ever play it?
I thought you were going to say, now that Mary recommends it. Now it's just like, how deep is that knife going into Garnett's back right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now that somebody I actually trust is recommending it.
Last week, you tell me you never do any of the things I recommend. This week, you say any of the things that that Garnett recommends.
No, again, it's about trust and you know, actually thinking the person has good taste.
Sometimes it takes a stone cold stranger to really shake it up, think twice about it.
Did you ever play any of the Yakuza games, Christian?
I have probably played in total 4 hours of over a four games, where it's like, this is the one. And then, or like, I'll buy it and be like, this is the one I'm going to stream for St. Jude this year. And then people will be like, no, that's not the one we picked. And I was like, oh, easy to set aside. I probably should and probably would love them, but it is just this... They're big and I don't have a good excuse. I just haven't done it. I mean, like, same with Plague's Tale Innocence. I've had it downloaded on all of my things, and I'm like, today's the day I play it. maybe I'll go re-download Fortnite. Like, I just find other excuses.
It is cool that all these Yakuza games are on Game Pass now. It is does make it a lot simpler to give it a shot. So maybe I will.
Yeah.
Glad to hear you're enjoying it, Mary. That's awesome. Are you? Do you think that you'll stick with the series and play more than just Zero?
Yeah, I think I'm going to see how this experience treats me and then, you know, like go through all the motions with it because it was quite a tumultuous playthrough. The boss was really hard. It took me so long and I don't know if that's normal or if I'm bad. So I'm kind of sussing it out. Like, what if it gets really, really difficult to get through these boss sequences? It's hard to describe, but it was like, he got really tough with the basic moves that I had learned. And it took me, I think, over 5 tries. It's not like Dark Souls level, but I mean, it was stressful. I was sweating and I could not beat this guy. And so I'm very curious to see what it's going to be like when it's done. But from my first playthrough, I am enjoying it and I can't wait to play it again. Like it was a joy so far.
Awesome. That's great. Great to hear. What else is on your playlist?
I'm also doing the Steam Game Fest demos and I got Floppy Knights. I'm a little early into that too, but it's like a card dungeon, RPG where you're kind of like throwing cards down to fight opposite cards, card game, but not card game. Right. It's cute. I like the aesthetics of kind of almost like a, it looks like a painted worlds, cute little textures. And what would you say that where it's like, it's probably going to have some tough moments, but it's got such an adorable aesthetic that you can't get mad at it.
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. Floppy Knights. Yeah. It's got that like almost like Saturday morning cartoon kind of look to it. It does look cool. I found the entire Steam Game Festival to be absolutely overwhelming. How did you select Floppy Knights as a game that you would give a try to? It's like unbelievable that there's this number of games just even in development. It seems incredible. It's awesome. It's an over abundance of riches, but it is also very crazy to like, how do I even parse this in sea of games?
You're 1,000% right. Much like Steam itself, it's crammed so much stuff in there, you can't navigate it anymore. Getting on Steam, I'm trying to like get my years right, but getting on Steam like 10 years ago was life-changing. It was like, oh, I've made it. Now, like, there's so much stuff on there, I can't find when something's good or not. And the Game Fest demos are the same. I live in Portland. Floppy Knights is made by Portland Dev, and I wanted to support them. So I like playing indie games. I actually do play indie games most Mondays, and I seek out local studios that I think are nice and are doing nice things. So this is made by Rose City Games, and so that's how I found it. So not standard. I didn't like suss it out through that Steam store, which would probably have been an absolute mess. And I agree with you. Like, it was very difficult for me to find. Every time I do it, I end up like Googling Steam demo that has dogs in it. And I just kind of hope that Google will solve it for me because I don't find it through Steam.
Well, the front end for the game festival, the Steam Game Festival, was pretty wild. It has like, you can narrow things down by subgenres and visuals and viewpoint themes and moods. It's like, we have so many games. There's so much that you can try that the like database of games. And then there's, you know, they're doing live plays of a lot of them. It's a wild thing to go through. At a certain point, I was like, how do any of these games make any money at all? That's a whole other conversation. But yeah, it looks like a really cool one. I didn't try Floppy Knights, but it does look like it would be my jam. I love card battle games. Mm. And you were digging it?
Yeah, it's cute so far. It's just a demo, so I think it probably needs a little bit more but what I've played so far, it's really cute and kind of my style, right? Of turn-based, so you're kind of like, you get to take your time, you're not stressed out about it, but there is some challenge that you have to like noodle on to like make sure you can get through everything. But it seems kind of like what would you call it? Like a cozy game, like a a cash, like fun, I'll play this before bed because I can relax, you know, the opposite. Like when I used to play like Amnesia, I used to play a game like Floppy Nights before I went to bed so that I had some separation between nightmares and going to sleep.
That's always a good, thing to have a buffer there between your nightmares. Awesome. Christian, you've been playing some Steam Game Festival stuff, haven't you?
I have. The first one I want to talk about is Forgone. So, Jeff, this is where you get to have a little bit of time to queue up our our little jingle that perfectly describes the Steam Games Fest.
You mean that one?
That's the one. So Forgone is on the Steam Game Fest. There's a demo you can download. And it is Dead Cells, but not roguelite. It's like, it's not a Metroidvania, but graphically it looks a lot like Dead Cells, like beautiful pixel art animation, really awesome colors. And you are getting new gear and, you know, kind of Diablo-ing through it, but it's side scrolling as you're collecting this stuff and gearing up, leveling up as you're making your way through this. But it's not a roguelike. Like the thing I complained about Dead Cells, being like, I love this game, but that randomization kind of takes me out of it, because it's like, no. I know what I need to finish this game. I need these two weapons and five more chances. Like that's what I need. And Forgone isn't that. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be it. This is a demo. I'm so excited for this game. I want to read everything about it. And then I Google it and it's been out for a year, like on Switch.
Oh, it says release date March 1st.
On Steam.
I see. It's been out on Switch. Okay.
It's been on another platform. And like too many games. Like, that's it. Like I was loving this demo. Really, really loving this demo. I wish there was a little better hit detection where like in Dead Cells, it's abundantly clear when you're taking damage. And in Forgone, I thought I was getting a dodge in and then like a counter. I saw my health bar go down. So there are some things about it where now I know that like, oh, it's out, and think maybe it's not quite as polished as Dead Cells ended up being. But
it went down in your estimation because it had been out and you hadn't heard about it.
I think what I'm playing is less of a demo, and it's a demo and not like a pre-alpha game footage. You know what I mean? Like right, I'm playing a small slice of a finished game and not a, right. Oh, this is going to be great when they finish it kind of approach.
Gotcha.
That said, still awesome. Still a good chance I buy it on Switch because it's already out. And it's, a perfect Switch game. Again, beautiful pixel art, and I can just kind of run it and know the levels and know as I'm kind of upgrading my gear to get through it. But again, you know, Mary talked about finding games on Steam, and then just there are so many games. And this, I'm going to say something that I'm being sarcastic about. But apparently anyone can make a beautiful game now. That's what it seems like. Like a beautiful, well-made game, anyone can do. I know that's not true, but there are so many beautiful, well-made games. And I think if you are like me, and Forgone is right up my alley, like made for me, and you also missed it, check out the free demo or, you know, if you can find it on sale somewhere or watch some videos of it. It's a very compelling, beautiful pixel art game that gets rid of that randomization that a lot of roguelites have. It's called Forgone. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I that's what I was trying to articulate when we were talking about, you know, just the selection process of the Steam Games Festival is everything looks good. You know, everything looks good. And you browse through and it's like, how do I even allocate my time to what was the hundreds of free demos? You know, not even selecting which game to buy, but they're all sitting out there waiting for me to try them. And there's so much. So even in these very particular subgenres, there's so much like, oh, this is exactly the kind of thing I like. And there's like, well, there's six of those. It's just wild how much of a concentration of high quality stuff. And it's exciting. Like these indie games are super exciting because many of them have art styles or approaches that are really different than you'll get with big AAA development. And I want to support that. I think it's phenomenal and it's very exciting to check it out. But man, there is so much of it.
Which brings me to the other one I want to talk about, these are the two I'm going to pick from the Game Fest, Narita Boy, which I saw a trailer for with texting with a couple of friends who also like these pixel art retro kind of inspired games.
Yeah, you know, we started the Celeste of the world, right?
Yeah, Celeste, Dead Cells. I got a text of the Switch trailer, and I was like, "This looks right up my alley. This looks incredible. Coming out this spring. I'm so excited." We're all like, "We're gonna buy it. We're gonna buy it." And then I was like, "Well, I'm gonna sit down here at the Steam Game Fest and see. There's a demo for this. I'm able to play this right now. Part of this. Holy crap! There were times where I was like, I need to stop playing this demo because I want this game. It is based on just the demo. Also, it's coming to
Narita Boy.
Narita Boy. Also coming to Game Pass. Excuse me. Just absolutely stunning animation and art aesthetic. That's kind of like this synth wave, you know, visual neon soaked world where you go into a computer to, I guess, like, it's become corrupted, and the fictional Steve Jobs or Wozniak character in the real world forgot how to code it. And it's like, there's fun narrative stuff going on between like the real world and your character in the game. It's kind of Last Starfighter. Is that Last Starfighter.
Last Starfighter, where they pull you into the video game. Yeah.
Yeah. Where that happens to a kid, and just the art style and the aesthetic and the story is kind of, and I mean this in a good way, kind of weird, where it's like the maker is doing this and Cedar is, and like kind of these terms and these names, you're kind of thrust into this world that's clearly existed, but you're learning about it again with this beautiful pixel art neon.
Looks a bit like Sword and Sorcery,
Sword and Sorcery, the pixel art game. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of extended, like elongated figures that they used in that game, that style. Yeah.
And the version of the game the kid in the game is playing looks even like it's, you know, it's like an Atari style game, but then you go into the world and you have, it's just awesome. You pick up your neon sword, you've got your dash, you're unlocking moves, and just, again, Narita Boy, I was absolutely blown away by this game, by this demo, and by the trailer, and too many games.
So beautiful. I'm looking through the photo, like I'm trying not to get spoiled. I'm looking through just like images on Google, and some of the screenshots of this game are absolutely stunning, like cyberpunk wishes. It looked this lush and like interesting. I have to ask you though, because I can't see it from these images. What's the gameplay? What do you do?
Yeah, so it's combat. It's hack and slash is a little, I think, playing it down. And I imagine you unlock more stuff as you go. But, you know, there's some platforming. You have an air dash where you're kind of puzzle platforming. And then there are enemy encounters where you have your sword and you can dash through them and strike them and as you unlock. So it feels like it's kind of a, you know, side-scrolling melee combat game again, but with these beautiful visuals on top of it that I think elevate it from something else. And then the story that it's telling, I think, is super compelling and interesting. So it's kind of got all of those components on top of it. It's easily one to watch for me and worth watching a little bit of video just to see the gameplay in motion, because it is absolutely stunning.
Yeah, it looks like its release is targeted as early 2021, so no more specific than that. But this is Studio Koba and published by Team 17. So
Team 17 has been rocking recently,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Narita Boy, N-A-R-I-T-A-B-O-Y, Narita Boy is the name of that one. I clearly went way farther down the rabbit hole than either of you guys did during this. I
played a lot more. I tried to just suss out.
Oh, well, maybe I'll try to be.
Jeff, do you have too many games?
I do have. Too many games. I do. But I'll try to pick out just the best of the best from my list. I'll start with my favorite two that I played, having not played any of the ones you guys have brought up yet, because again, there's just so many to choose from. But the one I immediately gravitated to first and foremost was a game called Rogue Book, which is a game I have been very much looking forward to. And I was super excited to get to play an early version. You can actually buy the pre-alpha, I think, now. But this is the game. I think I've mentioned it on the show when I first heard about it. It's a game that is being made by the folks that did Faria, which I found really late, but absolutely fell in love with. And they're collaborating with Richard Garfield. Richard Garfield, the guy who invented Magic the Gathering and basically invented, you know, trading card games as we know them today. And has
ruined a lot of high school lunches.
Yes. But also has numerous other games to his credit. I mean, Robo Rally, and the list goes on and on and on. He is, you know, I think a genius in the game design world. And so I was very excited to see him working on this video game, which is card battling, card-based stuff set in the Faria world, and which is this sort of storybook world. And boy, Roguebook did not disappoint. I immediately fell into this game and wanted to play more and more and more of it. A lot of features not available in the demo, but enough was there to make me super excited. So it is Slay the Spire type card battling game, very reminiscent of Slay the Spire in that it's a rogue light where you are trying to make your path deeper and deeper into the progression, the bosses of each level, and building your deck as you go. Like Slay the Spire, you build your deck. But the major design philosophy of Roguebook that differentiates it from those games like Slay the Spire and lots of others, Monster Train and a lot of other games I've talked about on the show, is that in those games, those Slay the Spire-like games, part of what you're doing is whittling down your deck. You start with a deck, you acquire new cards as you go, and then you kill off cards. You remove cards from your deck because they're not as powerful as the cards that you're getting, and so you don't want to draw them in your hand as frequently as the powerful cards. You want the powerful cards to come up more often, so you're trying to cull your deck and get rid of lots of cards. Well, that's fun, but it is it's a very intense strategic layer that really is the differentiator between whether you get super far in Slay the Spire or don't. And the design philosophy that Richard Garfield went with for this game, Roguebook, is the opposite of that. Get more cards. Get as many cards as you possibly can. In fact, the more cards you have in your hand, the more talents on the talent tree for your characters open up. And it's a fascinating departure because it really changes the play style. You're acquiring stuff all the time, which is very satisfying. Like getting rid of stuff is not really as satisfying.
I tell my wife that all the time. I'm like, I need this box.
Yes.
That Xbox 360 box is satisfying.
That's what I say about VR headsets to my wife. Getting rid of them is just silly.
However, I tell my kids the opposite. I totally tell my kids the opposite. You got to get rid of that. You can't keep everything. They come into my office.
There's no way to be a parent and not be a hypocrite. That's just the way it's just a combo package. Anyway, this game is gorgeous. I love the art. And it's got this fairy tale. It's, you know, Rogue Book is the name of it. And it's as if you're opening this book of fairy tales. And it's this big hexagonal grid of tiles. And you only see a very few of them. You see the destination tile where the boss is on that level, and you have a rudimentary path to get there, but there are a lot of unrevealed hex tiles on the grid, and the only way to reveal them is to use your paintbrush to paint swatches of these hex tiles and reveal what those squares have. And the way you get paint for your paintbrush is by defeating enemies. So you're trying to like defeat enemies, acquire resources, buy new cards, get gems to slot into those cards, increase the number of cards you have, the power of the cards you have, and get more and more powerful so that you can eventually take on the boss of the level and get to the next level. So it's very, you know, Slay the Spire-esque, but just the way you do that, the beauty of the land, this like exploration layer where you're not, you know, in Slay the Spire, it's like, well, do I go left or do I go right? And once you choose, then you're stuck in that progression. Here you have many more options and you're kind of painting the field of play and revealing cool stuff, and you get to find there's maybe like a cool little story moment that you'll encounter, or a vendor, or more battles that may be more difficult and have better rewards. It's so good. It's so, so good. I'm super excited about Roguebook, and I can't wait till it's released as a full game. But yeah, that was the first of my games in the Steam Game Festival. The second that I want to bring up is a game, Christian, I'm surprised you didn't try. Maybe you didn't know about it, but I think you would love it. It's called Blood Roots. Did you hear this game?
It's out.
Is it out?
It's another game that's been out.
Well, I hadn't played it, and it's awesome. Is it out on Switch? Is Steam Gun Festival like a bunch of games that are out on Switch?
Childlike wonder. Yeah. You just lie to him. Let him enjoy this moment of telling you about Blood Roots.
That's what he lives for, Mary. You don't understand our dynamic here.
Tell me about this game.
When did Blood Roots come out? February of 2020.
It's a year old.
When did it come out? On Switch. Yeah, on PS4? Yeah. All right. Well, I'm not talking about it then. It's not on a PC. It's cool, though. Man, that game's cool. Did you play it, Christian?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You didn't talk about it on this show.
No, I did not, because I was not that good at it.
All right.
It's punishing.
I got more. It's punishing, but it's so cool. It's like really stylistic and wild. Anyway, Blood Roots has been out for a year. So news to me. It's almost like there are... to know about. Okay, let me talk about a few more. This game called Timberborn, which is basically like what if civilization, but with beavers?
That's been out for 10 years.
Stop it. That game's not out. You're going to do this all episode. Timberborn is civilization, but with deformable terrain. It's almost like Minecraft meets civilization. So you're playing a civ game, a god game, but you're not doing it with human beings. You're doing it with beavers, and the beavers are able to, you know, chomp, chomp, chomp through the terrain and build, you know, deform the area so you can actually have a lot more freedom in constructing your civilization. Pretty darn cool. That's called Timberborn. And I went down the rabbit hole of playing a ton of sort of card battle games because I love them. A couple of standouts. One of them is a game called The Amazing American Circus, which is a card battling game, but you're not battling monsters. You're battling the audience at a circus, and you're playing as the circus performers. So the cards you're playing are like circus acts, like juggle underneath your leg. And then the juggler will like juggle underneath the leg, and the audience member will be like, whoa, that was good. And if you lose the fight, the audience are like throwing fruit and rotten vegetables at you and angry. And so you're trying to defeat their expectation to be wowed. You have to like wow them. So the battle is in entertaining an audience rather than, you know, violence, which is, I think, a really clever idea. The game looks really charming. You're traveling across America to different cities, getting new circus performers as, you know, decks of cards into your hand. And, you know, you have like the strong man who can buff people, and you have the clowns, and you have the jugglers, and then you have like a super move. And the super move in the demo is like it zooms back, and there's a tightrope walker on a unicycle. And so like the tightrope walker on the unicycle. So if you earn enough clout, you can activate your super move, which is like wowing the crowd with the tightrope walker on the unicycle. I just thought that was super charming. It's exactly to me the example of what indie games are. You know, somebody was like, we could do a card battling game, but we don't have to do what everybody else is doing. Everybody's doing monsters and heroes and swords and laser pistols. Let's do circus acts and an audience. I just think that's, I love it.
This is a game I have played in real life before the pandemic as a stand-up. And there's nothing better than going into a city, having people show up to your show, paid whatever it is, $20 for tickets, buy two drinks, sit in the front row, and cross their arms and scowl. And I'm like, you're... So my super move was always a physical act out. And sometimes it worked, but sometimes it didn't. But it's like, you're here to have fun. Have fun. So I don't know who these circus audiences are, but they should just lighten up, Jeff. They should.
You got to play this game, man, because you'll get some sweet new attacks that you could utilize in real life. You know,
maybe there's a card of berating the audience. You paid to be here. This is on you, whether or not you laugh. Think about your life.
There's a card that I was playing in this game. It was one of the clowns' attacks where he literally breaks wind at the audience. So I don't know. Maybe try that.
I just want to try safely re-entering the world, I think is the first first card step. I need, but
yeah, way to make it real, man. We were doing a riff.
Tell me about Blood Roots.
Stop. How dare you. How dare you? How dare you expose my lack of knowledge about all the games?
All of the games.
So, Christian, I heard you liked Geometry Wars back in the day.
I did like Geometry Wars. That game's been out for a while.
There's a game. What if Geometry Wars, but now it's called Devastator. I was like, I'll play this. It looks like Geometry Wars. I'll play this for a couple minutes. Yeah. An hour later, I was like replaying the same demo level over and over and over again to try to get a higher score. Gorgeous. I mean, it looks like Geometry Wars, but it has almost like Pac-Man style things on the course. You know, it's got like, you know, imagine how Pac-Man has a maze. It's kind of like that. But so you're playing Geometry Wars in a maze with features that you have to avoid. Pretty cool. It's called Devastator. Dig it. Plays in ultra wide on my monitor. Looks awesome. There's a game called Genesis Noir that's totally unlike anything I've ever seen before. It's like an Art Deco riff on jazz improvisation. Very hard to describe, but was cool. I recommend checking out Genesis Noir. And then a game, I think, Mary, I think you would like, if you were describing sort of relaxing sort of games that you can just kind of take a load off and play. There's a game called Potion Craft that I found to be really, really compelling. You are playing the role of an alchemist crafting potions, and you actually have to discover the potions. You are operating a sort of medieval fantasy potion shop, and you have a garden where you can pick and cultivate various ingredients. You have a laboratory where you mix those ingredients together and discover different recipes. And the way you do that is you take the ingredients that you've picked in the garden, you can put them in your mortar and pestle and then mash them up, or you can just plop them right into the cauldron. Then you stir the cauldron. And as you do each of these steps, as you select which ingredients to use, as you do all of the sort of mechanical prerequisites to creating a potion, it shows you this little map, this kind of flow chart of the processes that you're going through. And sometimes your process will lead you to another node that is a potion, and other times it will kind of just go on a wild goose chase and not lead to anything. So you're trying to find the nodes by doing the correct procedures. And then once you find the node, you discover the potion and you've got that recipe. And then you go into your shop and people come into your shop and are like, yeah, my husband is having a real hard time with rats and I want to give him a potion of poison to kill off the rat.
So what potion can I use?
Exactly. So you can get, like, you know, give him a potion, and then you can haggle the price. So it's really simulating all the aspects of running a potion shop, which doesn't sound particularly fun, but it was very chill. It's got this lovely little art style, this kind of abstracted, almost sketchbook look to it. I like it. It's called Potion Craft.
That sounds super up my alley. Like, yeah, I love that. I love anything that's like witch IRL, learn how to be a witchy witch, make stuff and give it to people to help them. There's lots of like things that makes me think of, like maybe Spirit Fair, where you're getting stuff from your garden and then you cook food with it and then you give it to people to make them happy. You kind of did similar stuff in Stardew Valley. Like, this sounds like it's basically just the cooking part, which is a very fun element of those games. Putting stuff together. Can you make dubious potions?
Yes. Yeah. You can make all kinds of crazy, you know, as I said, poison and dark stuff. And that flow chart visualization has mysterious looking little drawings on it. So there'll be like a graveyard. And if you know, your little node is getting close to the graveyard, it's like you're making something that's going to have some kind of scary effect. But you don't exactly know what that is, but you're kind of leading putting the right ingredients and kind of heading that direction. So it adds some sense of almost exploration or discovery to the whole process of
going on my list.
It's good. My favorite thing about that game, by the way, is that you can go into the store part and a customer can come in and be like, I need a health potion, and you can not have a health potion. And the game explicitly tells you they will wait, not get angry, and be super cool for as long as it takes you to go and pick the ingredients and figure out how to make the right potion for them. Like, there's no pressure in this game at all. There's no like ticking clock. There's no, well, I'm going to leave if you don't have the right potion for me. I love games like that sometimes, you know, where it's just chill, explore our systems, have fun in our game. We're not going to stress you out. And I need games like that sometimes. I could go on for like half an hour of all the different games. There's like so many games in the SGF that I checked out. I did a whole bunch of VR games that I tried, but you know, that's probably plenty. Christian, have you heard of this game called Hazel Sky? Has it been out for 2 years?
It is a game that I only heard about as I was pulling B-roll or covers to make, you know, the video version here. It looks beautiful though, but I have not played it.
Looks like your jam.
I think it maybe is out on Switch or is coming out, because like you Google and like Switch trailers are everywhere, and I can't, because I don't know how often you guys follow. I'm looking it up on my phone right now. How often you follow like the Switch releases? And
shout out to, not at all. I'm learning.
Well, shout out to the CAGcast, my buddies over there. They used to do a thing on their show where it was like a real, like Cheapy would come up with a list of things, and it's like real game or not, and it was just like Switch games, and it'd be like, you know, like things that fell into my bottom. That's not a real game. No, it is. And it's out on Switch. It's $2. And you're just like, what the heck?
It seems like only thing more dense than the Steam game library is the Switch game library.
This came out at sometime in 2020 as well for Nintendo Switch.
Seriously?
Well, the Switch is like
Switch isn't out yet. But
story, because it's all about basically like they made a console and it's practically a mobile phone, so they had to find games for it. And the easiest way to do that was to ask indie developers to make games for their phone console. So you have to make a game exclusively for Switch almost, because it is so restrictive, because you can't, if you're making a game for Xbox, Switch, and PlayStation, you're making a game for Switch, because that's the hardest one to get it on. Yeah. It's so ridiculous. And there's all sorts of like weird things that Nintendo did. I make it really hard for indie developers developers to put a game on there. So all these indie developers made games for the Switch, and now they're probably out and they're thinking to themselves, what can we do with this game? We're going to put it on other stuff and we're going to remarket it like it's the first time you ever saw it. We're going to put some fondant on this and you're going to be like, this is a brand new experience. And they're doing it. And they got you. The fondant.
I got fooled by the fondant. That's what happened.
Hazel Sky might not be out. It is also hard because there are too many games that when they get announced, and then because Jeff is right about everything, they've all been, Hazel Sky looks beautiful, and I really like the art direction of it. Man, there's so much though.
What about Hidden Deep? Have you seen Hidden Deep? Is that a game that's been out for, is the entire Steam Games Festival a bunch of games that I should already know about?
A lot of them are.
The worst part is that I literally looked at Bloodroots and was like, boy, I thought this game came out. And then wouldn't it be on the Steam Games Festival as a featured demo if it had been out somewhere else? But I guess
I'll send you the screenshots of the text I was having with in our text group about Foregone being like, this is the game. They finally are making it. Someone's making Dead Cells, but not right now. It's been out.
So Hidden Deep is a fascinating game about, it's like a 2D action exploration game where you're using all these cool spelunking abilities to explore this creepy cave that has monsters in it. And it's really wild. It's like super physics based. You use rappelling lines and you're really working the physics of the engine to explore these areas and try to survive. I got into that game as well. It's like Aliens or The Thing, but in 2D with this kind of cool art style. It's Hidden Deep. I played a ton of these games, y'all. That's what I'm saying.
I love it. All right. Did you play Noita?
Noita, that sounds familiar. Let me look it up.
It was also like everyone was like, if you like Spelunky, you'll like that. Noita is a brilliant indie game. Oh, yeah. Where you travel down, but it's all physics. Mm. Like everything has an effect.
Oh, yes.
Accidentally light something on fire and it explodes an enormous section of the entire level. And you're just like, I didn't mean to do that. And I think if you like this, you would really like Noita. It's just like super addictive.
Yeah, this is the game that's like literally everything is destructible. You can blow a hole in the side of any level, or you know, if you're powerful enough, you can completely deform all of the geometry. Yeah.
Yeah. And much like most explosions, it's just like, I didn't think it would be this big.
Yeah. I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah, yeah. It happens a lot. I like that kind of stuff. That makes me feel like I would like this too. Obviously a little different, but like, I like the idea that you have carte blanche to do things in multiple different ways and really test the limits of what it might think that you're capable of doing in a space like this. It's a cool concept. And also spoop. Is it spoopy? Is it scary? Were you scared when you played it?
Oh, it's spoopy. Yeah, it's super spoopy. I mean, it's a game where you die a billion D times. Like, you learn by dying. You know, I'm like, let's see how deep this hole is. Oh, I died. And then it's like, okay, I'll just walk over here. Oh, there's a monster coming out of a hole and it ate my face. And then, you know, so it's a lot of that, which is great for, you know, Twitch streaming as well.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So what do we think? I mean, before I end this segment, what do we think about this kind of thing? Do you think, I mean, I like the spotlight that indie games get in a situation like this, but it's a bit like drinking out of a fire hose. Do you think that there's, Mary, do you think that there's a better way to do this? Or do you think that it just open it all up and let people find what they find?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we were talking about a little bit how indie games are so brilliant because they tend to do things in a different way. We were talking about that circus game and how there's so many games like that, but they're violent. And this is like a really interesting take on that. Indie games are the food carts of games. They try crazy experimental stuff that you would never be able to have in any restaurant, be it five star or like your favorite mom and pop diner. They're doing wild stuff and they should be appreciated for that. You should be checking these out. I don't know what else to say besides like, if you haven't looked at these demos, do yourself a favor and navigate this wasteland. But to answer your question, it is a madhouse and there's too many games. It's really hard for me to find the diamonds in this. And that can be exhausting, especially for someone who maybe only has a couple minutes and they're looking for something. I would honestly say podcasts like this are a great way to surface these gems and allow people to find things that they think will be theirs and suss that out. So, I mean, honestly, not to like self-plug, but it's like, it's these podcasts. It's like checking out your favorite streamer who navigated 4 hours of this on a Saturday. And they were like, here's my favorite five. That's the best way to do it. Find someone that you trust and listen to what they say.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's well said. I love the metaphor of the food trucks of, or the food stands of gaming. I think that's perfect. I love that.
Oh, that's better than fondant. Oh, now you're on board with food so analogies, Jeff. Oh, okay.
So much better.
Oh, Mary says she likes Half-Life Alex. Now you love everything that.
Yeah. Yeah. I did. That's how you become my friend, Christian. That's how I value your opinion on things.
Oh, I have a long way to go. I got to buy that Apple headset. I like the democratization of this. I miss Xbox 360 where every Xbox Live game, Xbox GBLA, whatever they were, the downloadable games, arcade games.
Xbox
Xbox Live Arcade. They all had demos. And I agree with Mary that, yeah, find your streamer, listen to your podcast, and like they'll elevate things. And you're like, oh, I trust their taste. You know, this game has a red-haired protagonist. Christian loves it. You know, like easy. But I do just because I didn't dig a game, but you can go and play it and just see, and it might really connect with you.
Just because a game came out a year ago doesn't mean it's bad.
It's not a foregone conclusion that you shouldn't play it. I really like it, but there's so much. I don't know how you do it. And hats off to all the UX and UI designers out there that work on this stuff. And then the data behind it, but it's still hard. It's better, but it's still hard to find, even when you can dive into subgenres and genres of, and it's still hard to find things. I don't know.
I feel bad for all these folks working so hard and innovating in this space. And how do you even get noticed in the giant ocean of games?
It's frustrating for them too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, when we do sometimes, Twitch does, like, I've did three indie showcases in my time at Twitch, and every year it is really difficult for me to pick the games, and I have to just basically play a bunch of demos to find out what I think is worth surfacing. And I ask the devs all the time when they get picked, like, what's it like out there? And they're just like, it's a hope and a prayer. You know, it's really hard to get noticed out there, especially when a lot of these, this is their first game. They're not established devs. They have really quality products, but it's just so hard to surface without, like, I don't know, without that just luck that someone's going to stumble across your game. I think that indie games are extraordinarily valuable part of the ecosystem of video games. So it's really worth it to do some tries and some buys from these amazing devs, which I think make this world so much more robust and so much more interesting. And we have seen it. We have seen evidence that AAA games all the time will be like, do you guys play this indie game? It's doing something wild. You're like a circus performer and you yell back at the people who throw fruit at you. We're going to put that in COD and they'll do it.
Yeah. Right.
You know, bloodsuckers will do it. And so I think, like, you have to support these devs. I know it is exhausting to sift through, but I strongly encourage everybody to, like, get in there and go play some of these demos. They're free 99 and you probably will find something incredible, just so worth your time.
Yeah. Well,
speaking
said.
Speaking of games a year old, I mean, sometimes it might just take a pandemic, but I think, I mean, Among Us is a perfect example of, like, that game has been out for a year. Or, you know, longer, I think 2 years.
Yeah, a couple years.
It wasn't a Steam demo that did it, but it was just the right people streaming it and talking about it in the right time, and it exploded. So, you know, you got to get your game out there, and then those things, hopefully you can rise to the top. But there are so many that, you know, they resonate with certain people, and I really love this, and I love the spotlights on indies. And someone in chat, I need to scroll up, but, like, Summer of Arcade was awesome before. I love that stuff because there's a lot of people making a lot of really, really great games. And that's one of the reasons I miss in-person events. I sing its praises all the time. I have the vinyl here with me somewhere, but I stumbled upon Counterspy at E3 when I was walking by, and the art style blew me away. And the soundtrack's incredible. I love that game. And I saw it in person as I was in a space. So I'm hopeful that that stuff comes back. LA has a great indie game jams, and you can just go and participate and see the stuff. And GDC, I miss that stuff a lot. Yeah.
There's so many.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've made a lot of food-based analogies this week. So it's the perfect time for me to tell you about our sponsor, HelloFresh. Oh, what is HelloFresh? HelloFresh is fresh, pre-measured ingredients, mouth-watering seasonal recipes, delivered right to your door. I love it. I love it. Didn't do HelloFresh meal tonight because it was the Super Bowl and I needed wings. But last night I did a HelloFresh meal and it was amazing. We had pork chorizo enchiladas. Incredible. I love HelloFresh. It has improved my life immeasurably. Why? Because I have learned to love to cook. I have learned to be the provider for my family. They get to sit down. I get to give them a freshly made, homemade meal. And I don't have to worry about any of the junk that I didn't like, which was figuring out what to have. I get these wonderful these wonderful recipes. This menu that is different, varied, has so much yummy stuff that I would never find on my own. So many cool recipes that I would never make as a bachelor. I would never make if I didn't have HelloFresh. I get this great variety in what we eat, and I don't have to worry about it. It's so fun to get on the app and select the meals a few weeks in advance. I love doing that. And I don't have to go to the grocery store. I don't have to leave the house. I don't have to buy a bunch of ingredients that half of it's going to go bad in the fridge because I only needed this much and they gave me this much. It's all pre-portioned. It's all exactly what you need. And it's all freshly sourced. You have low-cal, carb-smart, vegetarian, pescatarian options every week. There's over 23 recipes every week. So no matter what you choose, every single recipe is packed with fresh produce sourced directly from local farmers. And you can cut down on groceries bills. You save up to 40% instead of shopping at your local store. That's amazing. HelloFresh's easy eats give you quick and easy meal solutions like the 10 to 20 minute meals. So simple, so convenient. So go to HelloFresh.com/10DLC and use the promo code 10DLC. That's 10DLC. And you get 10 free meals. Wow. And that includes free shipping. So again, HelloFresh.com/10DLC. Use the promo code 10DLC for 10 free meals. I highly recommend it. I've been using HelloFresh for so long, and it has truly improved my life. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have our parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. Mary Kish, thank you so much for being here. What a delight it has been to talk to you.
It's awesome. Thank you for making this weekend a little bit more fun, and it was really nice talking to you guys about stuff I already really like talking about.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the things you do online.
Yeah, I am on most things under the handle of my name, Mary Kish, M-E-R-R-Y-K-I-S-H. And I work at Twitch, so I stream there a lot, but I also work at the company and I make lots of fun stuff that you might have seen before, like E3 on Twitch and TwitchCon and these indie showcases that I was mentioning earlier. I'm always around and I stream on Mondays, every Monday. So you can always catch me there and come stop by sometime.
Fantastic. Christian Spicer, what about you? What you got going on this week?
I'm starting a new show. It's called The Foundations of Fondant, and it really dives into just kind of the backstory, metaphors, ways you can use it, the best tasting, worst tasting, getting it out of a bucket, all the different ways you can get it and use it. I have a new newsletter that you can subscribe to at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. There's currently the archive is up there as well if you missed one and you want to read one. A recent one just went out, and it was my longer form thoughts. So I write about video games. It's called Let's Chat Games. And kind of some longer form thoughts. This most recent one was about Stadia. I had some more stuff to think about on that. So you can find that at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. And then this show, I stream live usually on Sunday at 7:15 p.m. Pacific time at twitch.tv. Sorry, as I choke. twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. And I put some work in.
We're doing Valentine's Day next week, so
yeah, we don't know next week's time yet. Yeah. Typically Sunday at 7:15 p.m. Pacific time, and I put some work into the video stream as well. So if you want to hang out live with us, you can see I try to have B-roll up for the games we're talking about now and multicam, and I'm having fun. I'm having fun engaging with it. So you can find that again at twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. And when we change things around schedule-wise, Twitter's the best way. It is at Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. And also, Mary, I should have said this earlier, but the stuff you and the team are doing over there is phenomenal. So keep it up. It's been really, really great and fun to watch.
Thank you.
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And we love getting your emails here at the show. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. DLCfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those emails. If you want to hear me talk about other stuff, I have several other shows for you to check out. I do a movie and TV review show called the Slash Filmcast. You can find that at slashfilmcast.com. I do a comedy science show where you can learn a little something about science and laugh along the way. It's called We Have Concerns. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. And I do a show all about fan-controlled football, which is a new football league. Now that the NFL is all done for the year, fan-controlled football is about to start. It's going to be something quite amazing. It's basically Madden in real life. People on Twitch, at home, controlling every aspect of the game, calling the plays, picking the personnel, everything. You should check that out. We stream live every Thursday, 2:30 p.m. Pacific time at twitch.tv/FCF for fan controlled football. Dungeon Run. You can check out the Dungeon Run, my long form Dungeons and Dragons show, by searching for the Dungeon Run on YouTube or as a podcast. All right. Well, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us
Mary, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Sure. So this is a part of what I do is we do all sorts of stuff at Twitch to try and like get people to rally and get excited about what's going on in the world. And right now it's February, which means it's Black History Month. And we are doing so many cool things. There's so many amazing creators on Twitch that you can discover this month that have been here and doing amazing stuff. And they're all on a team. So if you go to like twitch.tv/team/Black History Month, you'll surface over 130 creators that opted in to like kind of just stream and showcase what they're doing. And you can source just like incredible talent. Some of these streamers I have like been watching for years. Some of them I discovered in the last month and they're awesome. So if you're looking for new people to stream and just kind of like hang out with, check out the Black History Month team on Twitch.
Very cool. That's awesome. Christian Spicer, what about you? You got a parting gift?
I do, and I've probably mentioned this before. I mentioned that I haven't watched football in 5 years or so, but it is, we are recording this on Super Bowl Sunday. And
what?
Arguably the best snack for Super Bowls or any snacking occasion. You can make them at home. Our Muddy Buddies. I'm talking Chex. I'm talking peanut butter. I'm talking chocolate. I'm talking powdered sugar. Delish. Perfect.
We used to call that dog food.
Yeah, puppy chow. That's puppy chow.
Muddy Buddies. You name it. I'll eat it. Make it. It's delicious. With little kids, it's kind of gets, you have to make sure of like, you can't lick your hand every time before, you know what? I'm just going to get you your own bowl. Here's your own bowl. Have fun. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I mentioned it before, but I like mentioning it on big games because they're fun, too easy to make and delicious.
Awesome. Cool. I have a TV show recommendation for you for my parting gift. This is a show that's been on for a while. I guess this is my theme this week. Me discovering Late to the Party with Jeff Cannata. That's what we got. But this is a show that's been on for a while. I just started watching it. And boy, am I digging it. I dig this show. It's called Search Party. I don't think it started on HBO Max, but it is now on HBO Max, which is where I'm watching it. This is a very quirky, weird show tonally, but I really like it. It's about a group of people that went to college with a girl who goes missing, and they get obsessed with finding her, even though they didn't really know her very much at all. And it's a comedy. It's like a 22-minute comedy, but also very dark and almost like an adult sort of HBO show. It's a wonderful hybrid of very different tones. I dig it a lot. It's called Search Party. It's on HBO Max. Check it out. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Ernie, who is at Ernie4UK. Ernie says, if you're a fan of the Star Trek series from yesteryear, I'm talking The Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and please watch The Orville. The Orville is a space show that harkens back to the TNG days of space shows with a positive outlook to humanity's future. With modern Star Trek shows becoming these dark and gritty versions, it's nice to have a show that has that comfortable feeling of familiarity. The characters are great, the effects are great, and the world they've built is great. Please give it a watch. It's become my favorite show by a large margin. There are 2 seasons available on Hulu for those in the U.S., if you're in the UK like me, you'll have to get a bit more creative in how you watch it. That's it for me. Thank you again for doing what you do. Your British American fan from Scotland. Thanks, Ernie. I checked out the first episode of Orville and it didn't grab me, but people have said that it stopped being a parody of Star Trek and became like an authentic version of Star Trek. And I've heard it got way, way better. So I'm interested to check that out. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Mary Kish and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to the folks in our live stream for hanging out with all of us in real time, making the show better, and seeing the video version. We appreciate you hanging out. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star, for those cool bumpers. And thank you to each and every one of you who tune in every week. We're grateful for it. We'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.